for this?
Are you ready for this, Micah? Are you ready?
I'm so ready for this episode. I've been working on my speech. I've been getting everything ready. I'm ready to slam my hands down on the table.
Wave them in the air.
Wave them in the air like I just don't care.
Yep. It's Dwight's speech day. It's the NESA conference day, and which is the Northeastern Salesman Association, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Northeastern Sales. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Sales or salesmen? I think sales.
Sales.
Northeastern, yeah. Northeastern Sales Association.
That's probably right.
Conference today. And
Blood
Dwight,
alone moves the wheels of history.
Dwight's the key speaker here because he won Salesman of the Year.
And he's so insufferable about it. There's a part of me that gives him, you know me, I'm always giving Dwight like excuses to be the person that he is. But like, this is his thing. This is the thing that he is excited about. This is the thing that he puts his heart into. And so to get this award, like he is very proud. The problem is he's being a sore winner about it. And that annoys the crap out of Jim.
Dwight was the top salesman of the year at our company. He wins a little prize money and gets honored at some convention. It is literally the highest possible honor that a Northeastern Pennsylvania-based mid-sized paper company regional salesman can attain. So,
I think what I find most interesting about this episode is it's not really Jim. I mean, Jim, as we see, ends up being sort of responsible for his success in the end, but it's not Jim that causes no prank that Jim does causes the issues for him. It is just the situation itself that's the issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, like Dwight, we see a vulnerable side of Dwight here, even though he's, you know, super pumped about getting this award and everything. We see this really vulnerable side of him being afraid of public speaking. And that kind of becomes the catalyst in this episode for various kinds of advice. And we see those two types of advice coming from Michael and Jim. Mm-hmm. And even though Jim, like you said, is essentially pranking Dwight and giving him these speeches to do, these dictators, famous dictator speeches, we also see Michael trying to give Dwight public speaking advice from his own experience, which, as we all know, Michael isn't the greatest public speaker. He has a way. But Michael is coming at it from having a history of being successful in this arena-ish because he was the salesman of the year in previous years. So we see him kind of using that as a way to encourage Dwight to do things his way, even though we know that Michael's public speaking really isn't his forte. He can be killer at sales. Like, no one's denying that about Michael because we've seen him be confident during a stressful sales situation. So those awards feel deserved. But whatever speech he gave afterwards probably was a giant ball of flames.
He's had so much trouble reading the audience. And
yes.
I think like Dwight sort of, because he seems to not have any, I think some people can sort of overthink things. And so Dwight not having any real public speaking or thinking that he has no public speaking experience, he goes into it just sort of, I just have to make this happen. And so he feeds off what's going on in the moment instead of sort of building up this whole what he thinks he should be doing, what he thinks he should be saying. Because that's like this whole episode is about Michael mistraining Dwight, essentially. Mm-hmm. And why we have to go through all of that just to sort of see Dwight throw all that stuff out of the window. Now, I do want to mention, because this is one of my favorite cold opens in the show, we have Michael and Dwight throwing the football back and forth and then getting everybody else involved too. And it's just one of those moments where it's like, this office would be, it'd be so hard to get anything done. It's no wonder that they're always failing because Michael's chucking footballs around at people and potentially hurting people. And of course, Dwight has to go all out in participating. And so I really like this cold open as sort of a peer into the shenanigans of the office, where Michael, I think he probably saw it Well, that probably is. I think that's like a SportsCenter thing, like tossing the football back and forth while you're brainstorming kind of thing. And so he saw that somewhere. He was like, oh, I need to do that in my office. And then it's just not.
But you probably saw it and was like, oh, that looks cool. I'm going to try and do that. And I'll look like the cool guy standing up tossing the football, right?
Yeah. And he's not. He's just well,
it gets Dwight overly physical with everybody. And I love that even though he knocked down Creed, Ryan, and Stanley, it is Ryan that Michael's like, Ryan, are you okay?
Yes.
He doesn't ask about anybody else.
Golly. Ugh, Michael. Yeah, so that's sort of how things go. And we also have Michael trying and failing several times for the camera, I think, to have a that's what she said joke. And it just keeps failing. But Dwight is so sweet that he just like loves Michael so much that he just gives him a pass, essentially, because mm-hmm. he keeps telling the joke. And then finally he gets something that's not even a good joke. And Dwight's like, yeah, he's so excited for Michael. And it's just very Dwight, which I appreciate.
So I did want to mention the whole I was reading about this episode and making kind of connections. And it seems like from the Diversity Day episode, when Dwight stole the commission from Jim, and remember how Jim had mentioned that it was like 25% of his year's commission that he lost to Dwight during the Diversity Day episode because Jim could not get that phone call off, right, that he kept trying to get?
Yes.
And so I can't help but wonder that this award this year happening might be because of that. Because on top of all of Dwight's sales, in addition, getting that 25 extra percent could have pushed him over the edge. Not saying that Jim would have won the award, but just saying that the commission he stole from Jim could have essentially made him the best salesman that got him into this whole convention speech situation.
Oh, wow.
I know, I right?
You're right. Oh, my goodness. Mind equals blown.
I know. And I can't say that was not my own personal sleuthing. I saw that over on Dunderpedia, and I needed to bring it up to our audience because I thought that they would really like hearing that because I think that connection is so astute and it makes tons of sense.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
The interesting thing about this episode, too, is that they clearly really wanted to run with this Dwight's speech thing being sort of the main plot of the story. And so the drama that's going on in the workplace is surrounding like the thermostat being set to different to different settings and like
there's like an A, B, and C plot a little bit sprinkled out throughout this one, right?
Oh yeah, because we do have Pam and Jim. Oof, oofa doofa.
Yeah. We have Pam planning her wedding in the office and Jim's reaction to that. We have Dwight preparing for his speech with Michael and I guess Jim's help. And then we have the battle for the thermostat, which starts off as essentially Oscar versus Angela. But then we see slowly everyone else in the office kind of subtly getting in on it. But it's only those quick little camera shots of everyone like getting caught twisting the thermostat. And then we have a couple of little confessionals about it, too. But I like that at this point, we aren't just focused on like a strict A and B plot with like the Michael plot and the Pam and Jim plot. And we're getting more of our auxiliary characters sprinkled in more and more, right? Because we have the moment between Kelly and Ryan. And so it's like we're really fleshing out some of these extra characters in these tiny moments. And I really appreciate that in the show. And I just, as an ensemble, it's all so good. And I'm really paying attention, I think, for the first time, how this all builds together. You know, before it just was like, oh, yeah, they're all there. And I've watched this show 10,000 times. And it's just everyone's there. And you just mentally assume things. Uh-huh. But really focusing in on how these blocks were built and how this was all put together, it's really fun.
Yeah. And that's, I think, hopefully the people who are watching along with the show, and or rather watching along while listening to our show, get that experience too, because this is our opportunity to sort of go back and dig in and find as these characters grow. And as I think the producers are starting to sort of tug on the threads of where they want the characters to eventually go. This is another one of those episodes that has an excellent scene in the conference room where we have multiple people talking and this sort of overlapping. And I have used the phrase, Pam, I'm public speaking. Stop public interrupting me more times than I can count with friends. And it's hilarious every time. Or at least I think it's hilarious every time.
All right. We're all going to go around the room and we're going to make toasts. And that way we will overcome our fear of public speaking.
You mean Toastmasters?
Pam, I'm public speaking. Stop public interrupting me.
I did not catch that line. I can't believe I didn't catch that line.
So now anytime someone interrupts me, well, not every time, but I do. I try to throw it in.
I want to talk about the egos that we have at play here in this episode, because I think that that's an important part of what's going on with the Dwight and Michael situation, like their learning situation with each other. You know, Michael wants to be the mentor in this situation. He sees an opportunity for him to teach and be the guru of something, which he absolutely loves. And then we see Dwight getting to be kind of the student of the mentor, which Dwight also loves. But at the same time, we have their two egos kind of pitted against each other, where they get in each other's way of this learning situation, you know, and because like it's almost like Dwight doesn't 100% trust Michael, but he's trying to, but Michael's leading him astray. And it's just they are not working well together. And I think that that's where the comedy comes in this episode, yes. In the way that they are just not melding how they should, because neither of them is anywhere near successful in this field. And I love Rainn Wilson completely improv'd that line about him being in the spelling bee. I know, which is so good.
That's awesome.
He tells this story in a confessional about how when he was in grade school, like kind of the last time he was in public and in front of an audience, he was in a spelling bee against somebody else and he misspelled the word failure in front of the entire school. I think that's one of those moments, and the way Rainn Wilson phrases that in the show and the timing he has with it, it's just so pointedly funny. I really like that moment. It stands out to me as one of a really good confessional moments in The Office.
I mean, it completely shapes and gives understanding and motivation to why Dwight is freaking out so much about this. Like that was a moment that shaped him as a person in embarrassment, and it carries on to this anxiety that he has now. And so that was brilliant. Like that was, again, I think it's just a matter of being a good actor and understanding your character in a way that it really worked. So good on him for improving that. That's awesome.
And Michael tries to display his public speaking prowess by going into the main office and announcing that everybody is getting bonuses, and everyone's super happy about it. And Michael takes that excitement that they are about what the announcement was about, and kind of he misconstrues it, or he reprojects it onto himself in being like, oh, look how great of a speaker I am. I've made everyone so happy. And it's almost kind of genius in that manipulation, if he really was the way, because he's doing it to teach Dwight something. And I'm not 100% sure that he didn't know that that was what was going to, you know what I mean? Like, I think he used it a little bit manipulative and to be like, look how good I look. Because I don't find him that dumb.
Yeah.
To actually believe that.
To go so, that far with it. Yeah.
Yeah. But so I thought, I like that. that idea of Michael manipulating the situation like that for his own advantage. It's one of those moments where you could almost see the good salesman in that, because you do see salesmen, as it comes up in this episode, being pitched as like sleazy charlatans, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And in that moment, what's Michael doing? He's selling himself as a good speaker, and in so doing so, he's kind of becoming a sleazy charlatan of bonuses in the office, right?
Yeah.
It's like all this going on, and I'm like, maybe that is why he was such a good salesman, you know, because he can find that and dance on that line, if not cross it often, on what he kind of can and cannot promise and keep when it comes to getting what he wants in a sales situation.
Wow. I like that. I like that analysis. And frankly, if that's not the case, I don't want to know about it because that's official headcanon now.
Well, I mean, it could just be one of those things that it's a personality trait that gets sprinkled in. You know, like people are complicated and people are deep and people use different tactics in different situations. And sometimes those tactics are less savory or more savory, less savory than others. And I don't think it necessarily defines whether you are a good or a bad person.
Yeah.
It's just in those situations, you make good or bad choices. And so I feel like Michael might, you know, walk that line when he's selling.
I think that that's fair. That's a fair estimation for sure. Should we talk about, we have Dwight going so far with this. We have him annoying Jim. We talked about how Jim is intending to make things worse for him by giving him all of this stuff. And, you know, Dwight goes into it just sort of not knowing how things are going to go. I mean, he goes, and I think it's so funny. The moment that they walk in and that music that we heard earlier just starts blaring and you realize, oh dear, like Dwight was already freaking out. And then it's this whole new huge big thing that not even Michael was prepared for. And suddenly the big deal becomes a bigger deal. And you're going, is Dwight going to be able to handle this?
Ugh. Yeah. Well, Dwight was not able to handle it. He couldn't get up there. He just froze. He had this incredibly crazy stage fright. And we get to see a moment of Michael going up and trying to warm up the crowd, as he loves to announce in his way.
Good morning, Vietnam!
And everyone's silent, and we see him struggling and sweating and...
Oh, he's sweating so much.
Grasping at, like, anything. And we see a display of Michael's inadequate public speaking skills, because he's grasping at, you know, insensitive topics and jokes that just don't make any sense and aren't landing. And then so we find Dwight getting his courage and getting up there, and he makes these speeches, as you were referring to in the beginning, with the famous dictators. And I almost want to say, like, the content of this speech, which, if anyone is interested, is all written out over on Dunderpedia.
Of course,
and very appreciate the fan of The Office who did that.
I almost have it memorized. I've listened to it so much. Yeah, like I can.
Oh man, I might have you. We at the end. Let's do at the very end. Let's have you try and
a
do
challenge?
It. I'll read it, and we'll see how you do.
All right,
sound good?
Yeah.
All right. Don't cheat.
No cheating.
But anyway, I find it displays how dangerous this kind of speaking actually is, because we were able to take these little clips out of these famous dictator speeches.
Mm-hmm.
And Dwight sprinkled in things that were relevant to the conference he was at. And you start to make your own connections, because it's actually very simple language that gets that riles people up and starts making them. You're able to take that simple language and project your own situation onto it very easily.
Right.
You know, because it's like broad speaking words that you're like, oh yeah, that is like
that's
me, or
that
me. Is us.
Yeah.
We do need to fight. Like, you know,
and then people
you start
in the
thinking,
room start, you like it, it yeah, it builds on
they,
itself.
And they all start feeding into it, and the crowd gets really into it, and everyone's cheering, and everyone starts repeating stuff. And in our current kind of political atmosphere, I couldn't help but be slightly terrified at how this looked, because it really is one of those saying moments where it's like you get someone up there that is like pounding their fist and waving their arms and saying these big, simple statements of things that people can latch onto. And it gets them riled up, and it worked in this simple situation. Like, imagine if that's why it worked in such a bigger political arenas throughout history. And yeah, it was almost like, wow, this is kind of dangerous.
Yeah.
Like that's so easy.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. I mean, you go, oh, I get how this can happen. I understand it now. Like, it makes sense how that happens. And we should also mention, because if we don't, I'm sure that we'll get dinged for it. Back at the office, Angela, for the first time ever, falls a little ill, right? She's feeling a little sick.
I like that we see Angela kind of up there for Dwight. She's putting herself out there just a little bit more. Just like when he left, she was like, and a good luck to you, Dwight. Like, she just shouts it out. And, like, super awkwardly in the middle of the office. And then mysteriously, like, I need to go. I'm sick. And then we see her in the back of the arena in disguise, taping it for him. And of course, the camera catches all of this, right? Which is a nice little treat. And we get Pam's significant eye roll back in the office.
Gosh,
when she's like, oh, you guys are trying to hide it, but you're doing terrible.
You're so bad at hiding it. Take it from someone who is also not good at hiding it, I guess.
Yeah, right? And also back at the office, the Jim and Pam situation that's going down. Because Pam can't help, but she makes an excuse in one of her confessionals that she has to plan her wedding or do some wedding planning in the office. And she was even like sending out invitations. To me, that was kind of blatant, honestly.
Yeah.
I was like, this is a lot of wedding planning in the office.
She literally has Ryan and Kelly helping her stuff wedding invitations at the table in the office.
I'm like, come on, girl. Like, you have, it's a regular job. Like, just do it in the evening when you get home. Like, it never mentions that she has a second job or something else going on. Like, why? Like, you have
Michael's
weekends,
away.
You have after work. I don't know. I had a jobby job when I had my wedding, and I didn't plan it at the office, essentially. You know,
yeah, like, but you didn't have an office like their office.
Well, actually, I had an office that was like way more creative and would have been way more accepting of something like that.
Oh,
you know,
but like, but you knew it was like, I'm at work. I got to do my job.
Yeah, exactly.
And like, Pam's just like, meh.
Well, I guess it is kind of, we've seen over and over how boring it is there and how when Michael's gone, no one gets anything done.
Yeah.
Or they work harder when I'm gone. I mean.
No, they get the same amount of work done whether I'm here or not.
So I guess, yeah, maybe that's just a testament of, well, Michael's gone, might as well do this blatantly other thing other than my job. And it really, we see how affected Jim is by all of this planning and busy work that she's doing around the wedding. So much so that he's kind of not pushed into, but I guess he feels it as his only way out is to, I need to plan a vacation.
Yes, his feelings get hurt, and so he plans a vacation.
You were so down on Jim.
I know. And as I was watching this episode, I was like, oh, crap. I'm going to try not to say anything, but I just did. I can't help it. I just feel like he's so whiny. He's like, I just can't be here for my friend because I love her, but she's my friend, but I can't be here for her. So I'm just going to go to a random friggin' place. I get it, but I don't get it. I don't know. I just like
what don't you get? Like, I don't know. Like,
I don't get how he can care about her enough. Maybe I just haven't cared about someone as much as Jim has, to where it is this thing where you literally physically cannot be there for the person in some, like, my thought and the way that I would approach a situation is, no matter how I feel, I want to support this person that I care about. And I can't support this person by being in Australia when they are back in the US and getting married and potentially like having a bad wedding day. Like, you know, things could go wrong and she might need somebody. And if I'm the person that's always been there for her, then I want to be there for her. I don't want to be in Australia. But maybe I just don't understand that pain.
I think it's the difference of, you have like deep love for somebody in addition to being their support person. You know, like, especially like that kind of torture. I mean, I don't know. I've watched a lot of romantic comedies. I feel like I get it. Like, you know, or like, haven't you ever had like a super, super crush on somebody that was like in your friend group in high school or something? I don't know. Like, just that it was, you wanted to be around them, but at the same time, it was hard to be around them.
Maybe.
You know, like, that's what I feel like this is. And it's like, to the max, because he's not connected. It's like an adult relationship. He like basically is super in love with her, and he has to watch her be with somebody else that he can see isn't right. And I just don't know. I could see how he'd want to run away.
Yeah, I know. But like, sure, you want to run away, but shouldn't you be there for the person who you care so much about and who might, like, I understand that this is more than just a, you know, this is not a platonic thing. I get that. But I don't know.
I don't know. I feel like when the friends, when the, like the friendship feeling is higher than the love feeling, you can be there for every, for them.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Like that's easy. Like that's an easy choice. Of course, like you would be there for them. But for Jim and Pam, it's like, Jim, the love feeling is so much bigger than the friendship feeling.
But isn't that kind of selfish?
The friendship feeling's like the basis of it.
For sure. But isn't it kind of selfish of him to hurt her by not being there?
Or is he being a self-preservationist where it is, it would, you know, he, in order for him to get through this, he can't be there.
Yeah. So he is choosing himself over her. And at the same time, though, they put this relationship like he's supposed to be so madly in love with her that he'd do anything for her. I think that's where my problem lies, because it's like, maybe it's just that it's more real life than I think the show tries to put on sometimes. Like, and maybe that's the point. Like, we see this relationship and everybody sort of, what is the word? Sort of not fantasizes, but sort of makes it this fairy tale, but it's actually just real people, and real people make selfish choices at times to protect themselves. And so Jim is just, he's just a dude and he's protecting himself. If I look at it through that scope, then I'm completely on board with what he did. But if I look at it through the way that I always hear people talk about Jim and Pam, whenever I'm like, I'm not really a big Jim and Pam friend, they're like, oh, it's the perfect relationship, blah, blah. If I look at it through that, then it's like, I think that he would be there for her if it was that kind of thing. But they're
right,
real people.
I see that. I totally see that. I see where you're coming from with that. But yeah, I like the rockiness and the realness of their relationship. I like that they're selfish sometimes, because real people are selfish sometimes. And I mean, I find it whenever I watch a TV show or a movie or I read a book and I see someone so self-sacrificing for an unrequited love relationship that they just get their heart trampled on over and over again, I have a hard time respecting that kind of person.
Yeah, that's
because,
true.
Yeah, because I'm like, you're loving being sad so much. You're not trying to get. You're not trying to make any change. It's just like the person that likes to complain about everything without doing anything about it, right? That they just like to complain about their bad situation instead of actively trying to get themselves out of it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yes, you can still complain about it if you're trying to get out of it. You know, like I feel like, okay, you get the complaint if you're working hard to like get rid of it. And I feel like Jim is the type of the Jim Pam situation that we're in right now. It's like Jim is trying to get himself out of this pickle he's in with his feelings and how he feels about Pam, and at the same time he's, you know, essentially also complaining about it because it's really, really hard. And so I see that as like a real thing, and I don't see him as like the hopeless romantic character that is just getting his heart trampled over and over again just for the sake of being a martyr. You know, he's working at it. He's trying to get away. Literally.
That's fair.
He's
going to go away.
To Australia. Non-refundable. And he decides to bring this up to Pam. Well, because they start chatting about it, as friends do. And he mentions that he is leaving June 8th and her wedding is June 10th. So she gets that harsh realization that he will not be there at the wedding.
Yeah, because Australia is already a day in the future. So.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's another thing. That's another moment, too, where I think it's really telling for Pam to hear that, because she's also hearing that he has too strong of feelings to be there. Like, I think that she would get that. You know what I mean? I think it's almost
so
like it's like
a confirmation,
big,
maybe.
Yeah, it's like a big eye opening or, you know, confirming them when you would know. That like someone who said that they had feelings for you and then all of a sudden they can't be there for you as the friend that you thought that they were, like just the friend level that you thought they were. And they're like, look, I'm really sorry, but I booked this trip. You would be like, first of all, that's crazy that you booked that. Like, how could you? But then you're like, oh, you can't
it.
Be there.
Yeah.
Like you can't handle this.
And I do wonder, too, if it takes it from like this whole time they've both sort of existed in this. This false belief and this sort of fake reality where everything they're doing is like innocent and cutesy and not that big of a deal. And when Jim does that, when Jim decides that he needs to not be there, Pam and him sort of realize that the things that they do have consequences, and mm-hmm. you can't just keep sort of having your cake and eating it too. And like real life comes back because we aren't just two people, like we're human beings who have real feelings that get hurt. Mm-hmm. So it's real.
Yeah. And so even though we didn't see a whole bunch of Jim and Pam in this episode, as you could see, I think that there was a lot of subtext going on with the actual events that happened and the decisions that these characters made in this episode.
Yep. So we cut back and, you know, Dwight already killed his speech. Like, he did a fantastic mm-hmm. job.
And Michael gets up in the middle of it.
Michael leaves because he cannot handle the fact that this person who he thought was sort of below him in speaching. Wow, Micah. This person who's below him in speaking is suddenly just captivating the audience. And mm-hmm. Michael is uncomfortable because Michael got up there and absolutely failed. So he goes to the bar. And this just, I got annoyed at Michael at this point, because Dwight comes to talk to him, and, you know, some of you who are listening have seen this already, but Michael starts to tell this story, this totally fake story, and Dwight, of course, because he loves Michael and, you know, hangs on his every word, gets captivated. So Michael sort of tries to take credit for all the people who Dwight captivated. It's very yes. strange. He's like reclaiming his pride somehow.
And I entertained Dwight to no end with my bar story. So I captivated the guy who captivated 1,000 guys. Can you believe that? 1,000 guys.
I feel like we could have seen worse from Michael in this situation. He could have been crueler to Dwight afterwards, but he wasn't. I feel like Michael was hurt, and that's why he left. But he kind of had his drink and he mellowed out, and the way he still congratulated Dwight on his speech and doing a great job. And he didn't say like he used some lame excuse of why he had to leave. But all he said was like, oh, I got thirsty. Right.
Yeah.
So like, I feel
and
like
he could have heckled or something.
Yeah, we could have seen such a worse side of Michael, and we have in the past and we will in the future. But in this moment, I feel like he got a hold of his own feelings a little bit. Like, yes, he got hurt. Yes, he walked out, but he tamed it down. He told Dwight a little funny story. He essentially took credit for it in the confessional later, but he didn't go above and beyond into that really bad place that Michael can go to at times when it comes to trying to, I don't know, reaffirm his own status. I think he stepped back for a second and let Dwight be the hero. And I thought that was really nice.
Yeah. That I think that's the episode.
Yeah, I think so too. Are we ready for our Dundee?
So this week's Dundee, I love this. This is the Sneaky Sneak Award. And it goes to Kenny Barnt. That's at Kennethson on Twitter. Kenny Barnt has started a series of office-themed geocache hides. So you can find these office-themed goodies, including Dwight's mallard, his spy mallard, Pam's teapot, which is also a neti pot, and the Dunder Code. So those of you out there who are coming across these geocaches, ugh, we're so envious.
If anyone out there finds one of these, we'll link the tweet that we found this for this Dundee. And if anyone is out there and finds these geocaches, I kind of would love to hear about it.
Yes,
I think
yes,
that
yes,
would be
please.
Really awesome. And you know what? I would think it would be really sad if someone found it who wasn't an Office fan.
Oh, yeah. They'd be like, what is this? What is this wooden duck? And you'd be like, it's a mallard. Thank you.
But yeah, you can go follow us over on Twitter at @tall_beats. We're over there and we are reading all your tweets, and we read iTunes podcast reviews. We are over at The Incomparable. Mm-hmm. If you are a member, you can talk to us in our super awesome channel and we chat in there.
I'm going to have the name changed soon. I have to talk to Jason about that, but it's going to become The Conference Room.
Yes.
Tiff's suggestion.
I love that. I
yeah,
love it.
Too.
Yes. So good. So you could go join us over in the conference room. You can have meetings with us. And we are still holding that Michael Scott nickname contest that we're having. So if any of you out there want to send over your clever Michael Scott esque nicknames for me and Micah, that would be awesome. We love getting those.
The example that I'll give that's like so far the leader for Tiff is Tiff Fanny Pack.
Yeah, that one's
totally
still
something
really
Michael
good.
Would say.
It's still really good, but I like having a bigger pool to
yes,
choose
we gotta
from.
Have
so
some
we're going
to
keep this one going. Yeah.
Oh, and I do just want to give a shout out. Tiff, I texted you the night this happened. I'm sure you were probably already asleep, and I apologize for texting you in the middle of the night. I was at a drag show, and I was not performing in the drag show, sadly. I was watching the drag show. And I met a listener of Somehow I Manage.
That's so exciting.
We were like talking about the podcast that we did, and I said Somehow I Manage, and he was like, wait, Somehow, like the Office podcast? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, oh my gosh, I'm a big fan. So that was a really awesome moment, and I had to immediately, I'm sure that, you know, the nice beverages that I had enjoyed made it so that I immediately had to text you about it. But it was a good moment.
Did you all of a sudden put on your like, your date hat and act all weird in front of him and be like, hi,
I'm Date Micah.
Nice to meet me.
Blood alone moves the wheels of history. Have you ever asked yourselves in a moment of meditation, which everyone finds during the day, how long we have strived for greatness? Not only the years we've been at war, the war of work, but from the moment as a child.
Whoa.
Shoot.
Something
about being conquered.
You
no, something. When we
Yes?
When we realized. Okay. When we realized. Oh, yeah. When we realized that the world could be conquered. Okay.
You're like a third through.
Crap. It's only a third. Okay. Oh, yeah.
You only missed one word different. So
it's
far.
Been a lifetime struggle, a never ending fight, I say to you, and you will understand that it is a privilege to fight. Wow. That's my favorite part. So that one I've got. Oh, yeah. We are warriors! I ask you, salesmen of North and women of Northeastern Pennsylvania. crud. Be worthy of this historical hour. Oh, crud. I do not. Okay, I remember the end, though. I say, salesmen and women of the world unite, we must never acquiesce, for it is together, together that we prevail. For it is together that we prevail. And that's what I remember of it.
Wow, that is really close. You got like half of it down. Yeah, that is really, I am super impressed. And you just got that just from watching the show a lot.
I've watched it so much, but I've also like I've said lots of lines from this speech before, so it's mm-hmm. sort of like every time I listen to it, it reinforces those in my mind. Because I used to say that, like, parts of the speech. So yeah, I'm genuinely like, I'm gonna try to get this whole thing memorized, and then maybe I will like dress up as Dwight or something and do the scene.
I award you, sir, the what is it? Let's see, the Actors Guild Award for your memorization skills. That is just really very good. Wow.
Together
we will prevail.
And goodbye.